All right. Good evening. I'd like to welcome everyone to the Simple Actions group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David and I'm an alcoholic. By way of housekeeping, we will only be recording and publishing the audio portion of this meeting. I don't want anybody to get freaked out by the little recording button. We're not capturing any video. Nobody's going to end up on the YouTube. We'll just get the audio and publish it on our website, simpleactions.net. By the way, I put a link in the chat. Actually, I'm doing that now. You can sign up for email on our website at simpleactions.net. Very low volume outbound emails, but you can go there and opt in to be on a list if we have events. And there's a link to the PayPal. We'll talk more about that at the end of the meeting when the seventh tradition comes up. That's it for housekeeping. For those who care to join us, let's have a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anybody here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would just like to welcome you by first name. You have the ability to unmute. Feel free to jump in and say hello. First 30 days, anybody? All righty then. The preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous states that Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. So tonight, we're on steps 8 and 9, part one, and we'll do part two next week. And super excited. Please help me welcome our panel tonight. We've got the wonderful Jody and the wonderful Jen, two of my favorite people. So awesome. So here's what we're going to do. I promise not to read you to death, but I'm going to share the screen and we'll do the first paragraph and then we'll hear from our panel. So let me go ahead and do that. We're going to start on good old page 76. Now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of all persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. Oh, and Jen, I got to give you the privilege of unmuting here. Go ahead.
Okay. Hi, Jen, alcoholic. Hey, Jen. Thanks for inviting me. I think Amy invited me. Does that sound right? Is she the inviter? And it's nice to see David. And I'm really glad that my friend Jody is here with me, because, and I'm going first so she can clean up what I say. So, yeah, my experience with this is that I was so scared about this step. I would shake thinking about having to go to people and to make amends. And what I would prefer to do is just to make you be dead to me. And if you are dead to me and I don't ever have to see you ever again, then I don't have to worry about feeling ashamed. And the only reason that I had motivation to do this step in the beginning was because I did not want to drink again. I'd like to say that I was like all into repairing the harms that I had caused, but I was, and maybe I was a little bit, but much more was I worried about getting drunk again. And what everyone kept telling me was, if you don't do steps 4 and five and you don't do eight and nine, you won't be able to stay. So I had this list for my inventory, and then I had a more list that I had to put on there because I didn't put any financial anything on my inventory. So I had an old school bossy sponsor, and she made me get 3x5 index cards. And I was on the front, I was to put the person or the institution. And on the flip side, I had to put the harm that I caused. And then we went through them together. And it took me a number of years to, because I had one amend that I was not willing to make until I was 4 years sober. I had a lot of financial amends, and it took me, about 5 years to complete making my financial amends. I think that's all I got.
Thank you, Jody.
First of all, I just need to say, I'm shocked that Jen fell. That's all Jen fell has. God, if you know anything about her, you know that she's a wonderful person, but she's a talker. Okay. So this is going to be interesting. You know, I came into AA thinking I was like this perfect angel and everyone else had done the wrongs. And I was sorely mistaken. And I didn't realize that until I did a fourth and fifth step, at about a year and a half sober. And I found out I was behaving the same way I did when I was drinking. But sober, not drinking. And so I came to this step, you know, I had made amends. I'm sorry, guys, you know, I'm sorry, family. I don't really know what I did wrong, but I'm sorry. And, you know, this time around, like I could really feel the damage that I had done. And, you know, it was because of that drastic self-appraisal. I mean, that sounds, and it is, it's gross. It's disgusting. It's uncomfortable. But you know, I wanted to be free. You know, I had the sponsor that always used to ask me, how free do you want to be? And I want to be free, you know? And, you know, I love that part in the book about, you know, remember at the beginning, you said you would go to any lengths, to get sober and to stay sober. And so my sponsor throughout this whole process kindly reminded me of that. Remember, Jody, remember. So that's all I have.
All righty. We're going to continue on page 76. Probably there are still some misgivings. As we look over the list of business acquaintances and friends we have hurt, we may feel diffident about going to some of them on a spiritual basis. Let us be reassured. To some people, we need not and probably should not emphasize the spiritual feature on our first approach. We might prejudice them. At the moment, we are trying to put our lives in order, but this is not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. It is seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustice to him and announce that we've gone religious. In the prize ring, this would be called leading with the chin. Why lay ourselves open to being branded fanatics or religious bores? We might kill a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message, but our man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. He is going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than in our talk of spiritual discoveries. Jen?
I feel like you invited me to come share how I did things totally opposite of what the book says. Because I mean, I don't know. It's all fine. I did all these things in a goofy way and it's all fine. And like every way that I did things is why I'm sitting here tonight. So it's totally fine. So I'm not like beating myself up for any of this but it's so funny. If I think about how I was in the beginning of being sober, like, I mean, I should have worn a little white collar because I was like an evangelical AA, you know, like my friend and I, we like to joke around and do words where there's an A and we like to double the A so we can make the reference work for Alcoholics Anonymous. So I was like an evangelical, you know, with a double A there at the end. I mean, I just tell anybody like anyone, like the my son is on here. I don't know if he remembers this, but I would tell like the cashier at the Food Lion, okay, like how I'm sober and I believe in God now and my life has been so phenomenally changed. And we sometimes this lady would say prayers with me. Like over the conveyor belt. And this is the same store where I would go at like, you know, 10 minutes to 11 every night and get a couple of bottles of wine. And the same lady would wait on me. So she had the pleasure of watching the whole process. So, I mean, I was leading with the, like all my chins out for sure, you know? And I didn't understand in the beginning. I really did not understand this idea that okay, my real fit myself to be of maximum service to God and all about it. I had this really goofy understanding of that because my understanding was that I'm supposed to help you so that I can stay sober, and I'm supposed to help you and stay sober and do all of this stuff. And then my life is going to look like this good, sober way, like a sober life. And I was really busy in that for a really long time. And that's not really actually what this says. It doesn't say that I'm supposed to be like this sentence says, our real purpose is to fit ourselves to have maximum service to God and the people about us. I mean, also my son will attest to this. I'd be like, I gotta go to a meeting. I gotta meet this lady and help this lady. Bye, kids. And, you know, and just leave them with my oldest in charge. And I'm always surprised when they share with me these stories nowadays of like how not very nice it was for them, you know, or like I had intense periods of irritability. And so, you know, I got to go to this meeting and I got to go help this lady. But like, God forbid, a small person in the house I'm living in asked me for a snack. You know, and like, this is saying the people about us, it's not just, I don't have to go find these drunk people to be of service, you know? And so I really approached this in this like on fire way, and it was perfect. And I was on fire because I believed what you said to me. Like you, I thought I didn't believe it at first, but by the time I got through an inventory, I started to believe what you said to me about how my life was going to change if I did these steps and I did what you did. And I started to see, you know, changes. The most basic one is I didn't have to drink. And I probably was about 6 months sober when I started the amends process. And for me to not take a drink for 6 months, the only time I had done that, you know, had been years and years and years before. So I started to believe what you were saying to me. And I had this like passion for wanting to do what you were doing. Although alongside of that, I really did have a lot of confusion about your stories from the podium, because I would hear you talk about your college education and your AA spouse and your really nice home and the golf course and, you know, the BMW and all the friends who liked you. And like, that's the life that I, you know, that's what I wanted. I had a sponsor who had a BMW, and I wanted what she had. And so it took me some time to understand that in truth, by making those original amends and continuing to make an apology or make an end as necessary, that's the stuff that keeps me available. Because I can't be, if I am owing you an amend, I can't be available because I got to be busy making up a story about you, or I got to be busy making sure you're dead to me. But if I'm clear with the people around me, I can be of service. And what I've really come to understand is this idea of maximum service is a really humble thing. It's a really humble thing. It really is like getting a snack, giving a ride, listening to somebody on the telephone. It's not about this big exciting thing. And I think that's all I got.
Thank you. Go ahead, Jody.
That was much more Jen-like, much more. So I did want to start with, I think that I don't know how many parents or grandparents or aunts and uncles there are out there, but I think kids ask for way too many snacks. I mean, what kind of human can fit that many snacks inside of them? It's weird. But you know, I'm not going to add much to what Jen shared. You know, I had her same experience where it was like when I got sober and like the obsession to drink was removed, it was a miracle. I mean, because my entire world revolved around alcohol. And so when that happened, I was like, hey, everyone in the world, everyone I work with, everyone I encounter, I'm sober. Sobriety works. Let's get you sober too. I have a solution for you. And, you know, I love that part about, you know, but this is not an end in of itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. And, you know, for a very long time, I just had tunnel vision, and like that only applied to the people I met in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, that newcomer that I was working with, the friend that I had in AA, you know, it did not compute to my family. And, you know, it took doing that second inventory at about a year and a half for me to really see the damage that I had done and for me to be willing to start to change my behavior. And so at about 2 years sober is when I really started to change my behavior and start to be there for my family. You know, I think the first few sobrieties or first few holidays in sobriety I spent with other people in AA. And I'm sure that really harmed my mom. And you better believe I haven't missed the holiday since. And it's been a little bit that I've been sober. And so, you know, and not just showing up for holidays. I mean, just showing up in general, you know, and how can I be of service? How can I help you? And I did that for a really long time. I still have to do that because my mom is horrible at asking for help, as am I. You know, I love that Jen put in there that it doesn't have to just apply to AA. So that's all I have.
Awesome. Thank you both. We're going to continue on page 77. We don't use this as an excuse for shying away from the subject of God when it will serve any good purpose. We are willing to announce our convictions with tact and common sense. The question of how to approach the man we hated will arise. It may be that he's done us more harm than we have done him. And though we may have acquired a better attitude toward him, we are still not too keen about admitting our faults. Nevertheless, with a person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. It is harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. We go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feeling and expressing regret. Jen?
Yeah, that amend that I was telling you, it took me 4 years to get the willingness to make that amend. That was that this paragraph describes that for me. I really had a difficult time because I felt like this person had done a lot of things to hurt me, and it didn't seem like it was all accidental either. And it was really, really tough for me to be at a place where I could set that aside and be willing to do that. And what prompted me to do that, and this is really hard to talk about, like, one step and not other steps, but because it's, you know, I think because it is a design for living. And because what helped me was I was sponsoring this lady who wanted to make her amends to somebody that she had the same type of relationship. And she did not have any willingness to make this amend. And she was kind of like lamenting to me about how, you know, what she's praying for the willingness and it's not coming. And, you know, and I'm just listening to her. And then this thought came on my heart, like maybe the channel is blocked at another level, because how can I sit here and tell this lady how to go about this amend when I've been unwilling to make the amend to that person in my life? And that's what pushed me over, you know, the edge. And it was not my experience to feel like this tremendous forgiving spirit. I really felt mostly very scared. I think it's really, that's if I remember the experience, the overall feeling is just being really, really scared. And And in the process of making that amend, like sitting across the table from that person, the thought occurred to me that I don't have to be that person who was in that relationship. I don't have to be that lady that I was in that relationship anymore. And therefore, that means there's hope for me that I will have different kinds of relationships with others, because I'm not bringing the same lady into that relationship. And that gave me a lot of freedom. I'm glad that I made that amend, and I'm glad because I don't feel like I carry a burden any longer in that area. And while that might not necessarily be about being of service to that person, that I am more able to be of service to others when I am not like living in this up here. And that's what happens when there's this unresolved stuff, or there's places where I've harmed somebody, is I get like sucked into the vortex of thinking about it. And that's when I get irritated, when people want a snack or some newcomer's calling me. I'm trying to think about my life. Why are you trying to interrupt me? I've got business up here. So, I think that's it.
Thank you, Jody.
Oh my God, that voice between our ears, Lord, gets me in trouble every time. And, this paragraph I particularly love so much because I had a really, excuse my language, shitty experience with this. There was someone I hated, and it was someone that, I'd been sober for several years when I started hating this person. And when I say hating, I mean like your soul, your heart, your stomach, it's all burning. It's like in flames. I mean, that's how like serious this hate was for me. And, this woman, she tried to make amends to me several times, and I wouldn't accept it because I was having so much fun being angry and sick. And my sponsor was like, you need to do an inventory, Jody. You need to do an inventory, Jody. Do an inventory, Jody. She really didn't say it that much. She probably said it once. And I didn't do an inventory. And what happened was it festered and it festered and it festered. And that hate turned into, I hate my home group. I hate the world. I hate every single person in AA in Norfolk. I hate my family. I hate my job. I'm going to move. I mean, like literally just total upheaval because of this one resentment that I was dealing with. And I finally did that inventory. And the reason why I did not want to do this inventory was because I knew what my sponsor was going to tell me. She was going to tell me that I had to make amends to this girl for being a total douchebag to her. And so I did this inventory, and damn it, if my sponsor didn't say, you're going to have to make amends to this woman. And can we work it out some other way? And she said, sure, you can drink, like if you're not willing to make these amends, you better get ready to drink because that's what's going to happen next, And the seriousness I saw on her face, I was like, oh, she's not lying. And so I started praying for the willingness, and finally became willing after like I was sick of festering and that resentment and hate. And I set up an appointment with this woman, and I got to the part where I said, what can I do to make it right? And she said, I just want to be in your life again. I just want to be a part of your life. I want to be friends. And I said, is there anything else I can do, like manual labor? Like, can I do something other than be your friend? Like, I was still being an asshole. But she said, she laughed and she said, well, actually, I need help painting my house. And I said, okay, I will paint your house rather than be friends with you. But, the funny thing that happened was that, I had done my part, I had cleaned up my side of the street, and we spent 3 days painting together, and I remembered why I loved her so much. And it was like, it was like God opened me up again, And that particular sponsor said something then that I continue to use today. And she said, you're waking up, you're starting to wake up, Jody. And And that story just means so much to me because, you know, that woman is one of the, anytime I go back to Norfolk, that's, she's one of the first people I call, you know, one of the first people I want to see. And she invited me to her wedding after I wished her ill will, and especially that relationship. And, you know, we remain friends today, and that's the, because of the beauty of this program and the guidance of sponsorship. So thank you.
Awesome. Thank you. We're going to continue on page 77. Under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. Simply, we tell him that we will never get over drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. We are there to sweep off our side of the street, realizing that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so. Never trying to tell him what he should do. His faults are not discussed. We stick to our own. If our manner is calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the result. In 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. Sometimes the man we are calling upon admits his own fault. So feuds of years standing melt away in an hour. Rarely do we fail to make satisfactory progress. Our former enemies sometimes praise what we are doing and wish us well. Excuse me. Occasionally, they will offer assistance. It should not matter, however, if someone does throw us out of his office. We have made our demonstration, done our part. It's water over the dam. Jen?
Thank you. This makes me think of two different amends, and I don't know if I have time to say both, so I'm just collecting my thoughts. I think I'll tell you, share about my amends to my parents. So I grew up in this pretty insane household. My mom had an untreated mental illness that was pretty severe, and she was hospitalized for lengthy periods of time, about every other year from when I was in second grade until I was in entering into high school. And my dad, his response to what was happening in our environment was to be this very controlling and angry person. And the slightest thing could, like when we would get in the car, we would have to shift the floor mat on the floorboard of the car to make sure that it was perfectly aligned before he could pull out of the driveway. And anything that upset the order like that, he would just blow up and he would respond pretty violently. And when I was 16 years old, I was removed from the home and placed into foster care when a librarian at my high school reported, bruises and welts that were on me that she had observed. And I was like already full blown into alcoholism, at that time. And so then for years, I either didn't talk to my parents or, I would sometimes come over and then we would just have these terrible arguments because there was so much, anger and hurt, in our relationships. And so this was a difficult and one of the scariest amends for me to make because I felt like, it was just really hard to go and talk about a lot of the like dumb adolescent things that I did that came out of, like a child's response to a lot of what was happening in the house. And then later on, like an adolescent teenager's response and an adolescent alcoholic. So when I went to make the amends, my parents wanted to sit on the porch and my father busied himself with these like shears, trimming the bushes on the one side of the porch railing, and my mom sat next to me in this rocking chair. And, you know, I make my amends for things that I did, like stealing from them, running away from home 30 times and causing them, you know, all kinds of fear, all manner of lying. I just created a lot of chaos in the household. And when I was finished, my mom talked about how this time when I was a teenager and I was running away from home, how it was so scary for her. And she deeply regretted a lot of the ways that she overreacted, but she acknowledged that it was coming from this place of like terror, not knowing where her kid is. And my dad said nothing. And then you know, my mom was done, and then we sort of shift the subject. And then my dad is like, all right, well, I've got some things to do in the backyard, and, you know, and he leaves. And which was, you know, it was kind of awkward. It was really pretty awkward. And so, like, fast forward from then, like 13 or 14 years later, I am going to live in this home that belonged to an uncle who passed away, and the home is in terrible condition. And I have hired a contractor to do some work, and I end up having a financial dispute with the contractor, and my budget is blown, and all of these things are not done. And my father, for, you know, about, I would say maybe about a year, maybe a little more than a year, he drove to my house, which is about, not, you know, maybe like his way of driving is probably about an hour and a half, you know, one way, to get to my house. And he came and he worked on this house with me, and he taught me how to do things. Like, he taught me how to do some wiring, and he taught me how to do some plumbing, and he taught me how to frame a wall, and he taught me how to use a Sawzall, and he taught me, you know, an incredible amount of things. And he came and did this, you know, anywhere from 1 to 3 times a week. And what happened in the process of spending this time together is I started realizing that, like, I was really looking forward to my dad coming. You know, I really started enjoying the conversations that we would have and the time that we would spend together, and, like, just watching him try to show me how to do something, and then him working really hard to, like, not take over from doing it, because I'm new at it and I'm not quite getting it right. And it's like, I can see it's like killing him to not get in there and interrupt, but he's trying to let me do it. And, you know, what happened is that I was given this gift of a different relationship with my dad. And I can't even describe to you how important that is to me, because I spent so many years either feeling angry or abandoned or unwanted. And I believe that making that amend to my dad that he had zero comments on, other than, like, you know, the shrubs, that cleared the stage for him to want to come and spend time with me and to be a father. My dad has never apologized for anything verbally, you know, but what he has shown to me in the last couple of years through that experience is that he was not the father that he wanted to be when I was coming up. And like me, he has learned and things, and he has grown, and he tries also to you know, to show up and be of service and be better in his relationships. And it really meant a lot to me. And I'm gonna pass to Jay-Z now.
Thank you.
That was such a beautiful story. I know. My God, I'm almost crying. Because I know, you know, I mean, I've known Jen for 15 years now, I guess. And so I've gotten to see her grow and change, and I've gotten to see her kids grow up and become these beautiful adults. And it's been a pretty amazing experience. So I can't say I would have, if I was still drinking, I would have been around for that. You know, I would not have been present enough to be able to watch that. And, you know, you know, like I said earlier on, I came into AA thinking I was this angel, and my sister's an alcoholic, and she's a real alcoholic, and I was not a real alcoholic, you know, and so I didn't harm anyone but myself, right? And that was the kind of the mind frame that I had. And you know, I think, you know, of course, the first amends, I don't even count it, because it was basically just like, I'm sorry. The second amends was a little more heartfelt. But I can't remember in what order this came, but, you know, we were fighting one time at my mom's house, and it was probably a holiday. And we were fighting, I mean, like, you know, knockout, drag out, like, we were fighting. Not really physically, but, like, we were yelling a lot and it was loud. And so we took a break to go smoke a cigarette. And and she said, you know, we were just kind of quiet for a little bit. And she said to me something that has stuck with me forever. Like, I'm sure it will forever, forever in a day. But she said to me, you know, the way that I've hurt you. And I was like, yeah, yeah, I do. You want to hear about it? You know, like, I'm going to tell you. And she said, well, Jody, that's the way that you've hurt me. And I was like, oh, you know, like, I understood the pain that I felt, you know, I understood the pain that I felt when it came to my sister's alcoholism, but I had no idea that I had that effect on her. And that for me changed our whole relationship, you know, that exchange. And it really changed the way that I looked at my amends going forward, because, you know, there were a lot of people I had in my life that had done more harm to me than I had ever done to them. I mean, that's how I felt about the girl I hated. And, you know, it just doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You know, it tells us that we put, you know, we put the wrong the other did out of our minds, and we clean up our side of the street. And so it doesn't matter what that other person did. If I owe them an amends, I owe them an amends. And if I can feel it the way that I felt, you know, what my sister said to me, like, I know I'm ready and willing to make those amends, you know, like, I'm not just ready to say, I'm sorry, I'm ready to change my behavior. And, so, you know, I am grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous and, you know, the willingness of my sponsor, not my sponsor, my sister, she probably thought she was my sponsor, but my sister being, honest and open enough with me to say something that vulnerable. So that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to continue on page 78. Oh, shocking. Most alcoholics owe money. I've never seen that before. Most alcoholics owe money. We do not dodge our creditors, telling them what we are trying to do. We make no bones about our drinking. They usually know it anyway, whether we think so or not. Nor are we afraid of disclosing our alcoholism on the theory it may cause financial harm. Approached in this way, the most ruthless creditor will sometimes surprise us. Arranging the best deal we can, we let these people know we are sorry. Our drinking has made us slow to pay. We must lose our fear of creditors, no matter how far we have to go. For we are liable to drink if we are afraid to face them. Jen?
Oh my gosh. It's so nice to not have to owe a whole bunch of money to people. Holy cow. There's so much freedom in that. And I read this thing one time, I don't know, maybe I was 1 or 2 years sober, and it talked about how it's very difficult to have a higher power that is a loving creator when we are indebted, because it's very easy when we are, when we're indebted for that financial burden to become the higher power and drive the decisions that we make. And that really stuck with me. So yeah, I owed like so much money. I defaulted on all these credit cards. And also I continued to make these really stupid financial decisions into early recovery. Like one example, I felt very bad about myself. I had like almost zero self-esteem. So if I was going to go to a meeting on Saturday night, I thought I should make sure that I'm wearing something that looks good, because I gotta look good. So I would go to the store with a credit card and buy an outfit to wear to the meeting. Okay. I'm unemployed. I'm a full-time student, and I'm a single parent of 5 kids. So there's no like nowhere on the planet where this is a sound decision at all. And I'm just going to try to use a card until they take it from me. You know, I thought a credit card is like a check that someone's giving you. I never connected the whole pay it back part, pay it back plus. So I owed like $14,000 in various financial amends. And I'm looking at them with my sponsor. I felt very overwhelmed, and I didn't know, like, how am I supposed to even do this? Like, I'm not even working, you know? And so what happened was I was introduced to this woman who belongs to some different organization, that is it's an organization that helps people to get a budget and to plan things out, and it's for free. And, you know, this lady, this was just like how this lady does service in the world. So I had to take her all my stuff, all my, you know, like my laundry basket, because I don't know about you, but that's how I filed papers, to bring the laundry basket to her. And I had to also save all of my receipts for like 30 days of spending so that she could look and see and help me to determine like what was I actually spending on food and gas and other things. And this lady helped me develop this plan. And she explained this mind-boggling thing to me, which was like, if I only have $5 and I send the $5 to the creditor, I owe $5 less than I did before I sent it. What? So this is a kind of like the financial plan that I had, where I just had very little money, but I would forego certain things and follow this plan and pay these things off. And somehow or another, I literally, the first couple years that I was sober, I lived on our family lived on about $22,000 a year. It's hard. And somehow or another, by 5 years sober, I managed to pay those things off. And I'm glad I've had a different relationship financially. And I have had times of debt, but I haven't buried myself in this insane way, like when I was still drinking. And that's it for me, Jody.
Thank you, Jody.
Hey, Jody, alcoholic. So the cool thing about coming in really young is that you like have nothing to your name. So you have no debt, you have no home, you have no car, you have no family, you have nothing. And that's how I came in pretty much, aside from my parents, if you can count them as creditors. And my mom certainly would count herself as a creditor because I think she added interest, but, she was, you know, I think I was several years sober before I went to her with a financial limit, because I was really afraid. I was afraid that I owed her a ton of money, because, you know, I mean, who's the first person you call when you're drinking, you run out of money? Mom or dad, you know? And there were plenty of times where my dad paid my rent because my entire paycheck went to alcohol. You know, or my, you know, when I lived with my mom in early sobriety, she was still paying some of my bills. You know, she was paying for my insurance. She was paying for, there was something else she was paying for too. But, you know, so I owed her money from that. You know, I didn't have a job the first 30 days of sobriety. And, you know, after that, it was like a part-time gig, because I was like, I can't handle anything right now, any responsibility. When I went to make a financial amends to her, she said, okay, I'm going to need some time. I'm going to need to look at some figures and I'll get back to you with the number. Okay. And, I said, okay. And I don't know if she just pulled this number out of the sky. I don't know if she actually ran figures. But what she came to me with was extremely reasonable, I believe, considering how much money I probably really owe her. And, you know, I started making financial amends, and it was $50 a month. That's all I could do at the time. But I started and I whittled away and I got it to zero, and it felt unbelievably freeing to be able to pay my mom back, you know. And even after that, like there were times in her life where she was struggling financially and I was able to loan her money, which, what, you know, like that's crazy. And now I do need to tell on myself. I think I've told on myself to other people in this room, but I have yet to make financial amends to my dad. And I'm not really sure what the holdup is, but it needs to be done because he's not getting any younger. And so that's something I'm going to be talking with my sponsor about and probably doing very shortly. So, you know, the thing I love about steps 8 and 9 is, well, and really the entire book and every step, it's like, it's a process, you know? And I think I thought in the beginning that it's one and done, you know, I do it and I'm done. And that's not how this works. Like even at 17 years sober, I'm still remembering things from when I was drinking. you know, and not all of it is fun. Some of it's really painful. Some of it's really anger provoking. Some of it is a lot. There's a lot of shame and guilt in some of the things that I did. And but to me, it's all part of this beautiful process. And so I'm really grateful for that. And that's all I have.
Wonderful. We've got about 6 or 7 minutes left and one more paragraph. On page 79, although these reparations take innumerable forms, there are some general principles which we find guiding. Reminding ourselves that we have decided to go to any length to find a spiritual experience, we ask that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. We may lose our position or reputation or face jail, but we are willing. We have to be. We must not shrink at anything. Jen?
Yeah, you know, I feel that one of my favorite things about all of us is how brave we are. Even when we might not be super brave when we walk through the door, you know, we are people of courage. And sometimes when I feel like I'm scared or I don't want to do something, you know, you let me borrow a little bit of your courage to help me to keep on going. And it's a pretty, it's pretty amazing thing, even though maybe to people who don't sit in rooms on metal folding chairs in church basements or on the laptop, Zoom or whatever, they might not think it takes so much courage to do very basic things like say, I apologize or show up for work on time or, you know, just whatever. A lot of what has happened here for me has been really humble. And I had a very close friend who passed away, and she used to call it life in the trenches. And that is just a really, really much of life is just really humble. And the idea that it would take a whole lot of courage to do things that my neighbor probably thinks are pretty basic, then maybe that's what sets us apart. I don't know. But I feel like this, that sentence that you read, I'm trying to find it in. Oh, that we've decided to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience. And we ask that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. I think in a lot of ways, steps 8 and 9 are part of the boot camp of what prepares me for what has come after the initial pass through of the steps, to be willing to find the courage to ask for the strength and direction to do the right thing. And I've spent a lot of time here not doing the right thing. And I've had the, you know, the privilege of sometimes behaving in sobriety in a way that I didn't even behave when I was a drunk lady. And so, you know, having the courage to face the fact that I can still do these things and there's still space for me here when I'm at my best with you and when I'm at my worst with you. And that, you know, no matter what the personal consequences may be, they always seem so much worse on the front side than they do on the backside, you know? And so many of the things that I have been asked to do here that seem so terrible on the front side, I look back and I can see how those are the things that, whether they were mistakes or whether they were making good choices or repairing things, those are the experiences that have helped me to be more humble and more connected with my higher power, and therefore a little bit more willing to sit here with you. So I think that's all I got.
Thank you, Jody.
I just listen to Jen share all the time, and normally our phone conversations last anywhere from 2 to 3 hours. So you understand how willing I am to be a part of that. I love it. But you know, it says again in that last paragraph that was read, it asks about any lengths again. And like, I think that is so very important, for us to remember, for me to remember that I said I was willing to go to any lengths. And then the other thing that struck me was we must not shrink at anything. Ooh, this last year, if I haven't shrunk at this last year, I'm going to be all right. It's been a rough year, and not just because of COVID. You know, and I did shrink. I shrunk for a long time, and until I was honest enough to tell someone what was going on in my life. And then that it's like the rooms and the people in AA, they give me the power, like Jen was saying, the courage to do the right thing. You know, they give me the courage to not shrink it in. And so I'm just always going to be grateful to AA, and I am so grateful for this program and steps 8 and 9, and that we must not shrink at anything. So don't forget that. Thanks.
Oh, thank you both so much. You know, anybody who knows me knows that I'm not judgmental, right? Everybody? No. Okay. But that, what just happened here tonight, is exactly what we had in mind when we started this meeting. What if we read some paragraphs out of the big book and people came and told their stories and shared their experience? It was just beautiful, just fantastic. So I'm sorry, that was my judgment. Hey, I'm gonna pass the seven tradition basket. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. Are there any announcements for the good of AA? You have the ability to unmute.
I'm Jody, and I'm an alcoholic. I just want to put in a plug for my home group, Serendipity. We meet in High Point, North Carolina, and we are doing a Zoom and hybrid version. So if you're interested in going to a meeting in North Carolina, it's the best damn meeting in the whole state. So ask me about it. I'll give you the info.
All right. And everybody knows about Saturday of Service, right? Coming up this Saturday, June 12th, 1 p.m., 1 to 4. We're going to have, if you're interested in learning more about service, all of the service committees are going to do 4 or 5 minutes on corrections, treatment, CPC, PI, et cetera. They're good. And then the feature sort of event is our delegate, Sherry W., is going to come and tell us what happened at the General Service Conference in April. All the recent changes in AA will be discussed at length. We'll have the opportunity to meet her and maybe chat with her a little bit. That's this Saturday, 1 p.m. The information is on tidewaterintergroup.org. Anybody else? Announcements? Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we'll be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to any of us. Or if you're shy, feel free to send an email to info@simpleactions.net. In closing, thank you both so much again. It was just wonderful. Thank everybody who participated. My co-host will have the opportunity to unmute after the Lord's Prayer. And thank Jen and Jody one more time. And I wonder if Morgan would read the last three paragraphs on page 164.
I got you.
Thank you.
Thank you both so much. That was an amazing meeting. I'm Morgan, I'm an alcoholic. This is a vision for you. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation, which you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thanks.
Thank you, Momo. I'd invite everybody to virtually circle up and hug it up and unmute. And let's just like blast out the Lord's Prayer in a confusing, unsyncopated way. Moment of silence, please. Our Father.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name.
Thy kingdom come.
Kingdom come. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven.
Give us this day our daily bread.
And forgive us our trespasses.
As we forgive those who trespass
against us.
Lead us not into temptation. Deliver us from evil.
For thine is the kingdom. The power.